1-800-449-8686. This is the Phil Hendry Show.
You know, the Declaration of Independence, you know, we declared our independence from England. I got a Declaration of Independence that I'm going to be issuing today here on the Phil Hendry Show, and that is this. My show is essentially a comedy show. Essentially, we do things that are shticky, satirical, and we try to make people laugh. But I reserve the right from this day forward to talk about anything I want to talk about, any way that I want to talk about it. Because the world is turning, things are changing, and sometimes I just feel like talking about stuff the way I want to talk about it, not necessarily doing any shtick with it. Now, today I flipped on my television set, I saw another car bombing, and I think I want to talk about this tonight. Not car bombings, but here's what I want to talk about. Here's what I simply want to lay out there for any and all who hear this. This country has not yet come to terms with what has happened to it. Americans do not yet understand what has happened to it. We don't really get what happened to us on 9/11. We think we're at war with Al-Qaeda. We are not at war with Al-Qaeda. We are at war with the entire Islamic fundamentalist world. The entire Islamic fundamentalist world. That means we are at war. And when I say at war, I'm not talking about a war of words. I mean we have been attacked. Our people have been murdered by organizations bent on the destruction of this country. They are the country of Iraq, the country of Iran. They are Hamas, they are Hezbollah, they are Al-Qaeda, they are the Martyrs Brigade, they are the entire Islamic fundamentalist world. And I would almost be tempted to say the entire Islamic world, but I don't really know how the rank-and-file Arab people feel, although I do know that they like our movies, they like to wear our clothes, and they like to listen to our music. So I'm pretty much sure that the rank-and-file people of Arabia and Persia pretty much admire American culture. But we are definitely at war. And when I say we, I mean the United States, Israel, and the Western world is at war with the entire Islamic world. Now that means that they have declared war on us, they have murdered our people, and we are still playing like this is a war with Al-Qaeda, and our guys are searching caves, and we're going to keep, Arab-looking guys out of our country, and we're going to have hearings to decide how we can keep another terrorist act. This is far beyond the realm of terrorist act. This is the activity of the Islamic world, to wit the governments of Iran, Iraq, probably Egypt, Pakistan. In fact, that Pakistan country with that Musharraf, a guy who's only holding on to his power because he is playing ball with those Islamic fundamentalists, they're fomenting their own kind of war against India. Our allies in this war are, to wit, Israel, Western Europe, India. Every democracy is being attacked at present, but specifically America, by the totalitarian, Hitler-like, fascistic, Nazi-like, Islamic fundamentalist regimes with all their anti-Semitism and their yearnings for murder. It is time that the President of the United States of America, George Bush, back up the words that he spoke on September the 20th. And the only way you back up those words is you tell the regimes of Iran, Iraq, and anybody else that wants to come to bat that we will actively destabilize and overthrow your regimes using indigenous groups of revolutionaries. And the people of Iran, by the way, and Iraq, hate their governments. They hate them. They despise them. That we will now actively destabilize your governments using whatever means, and I think the means begin with actively using the indigenous revolutionary groups of those countries, that if we have to throw our own guys into it, we will, that if we have to throw our own Air Force into it, we will, that if we have to start flexing a little nuclear muscle, because I see those Muslims in Pakistan like to shoot off rockets to scare people, because they've got a group of fundamentalists in that country that want to create their pan-Muslim world. Well, guess what? We got a whole lot of freaking megatons going on over here. We are at war with the Middle Eastern nations that are fundamentalist Islamic republics, if you want to call them that, or regimes. It is not against Al-Qaeda. We don't have any friends over there. And the final tally on this thing is going to come when we see just who's stabbing us in the back. And it's Saudi Arabia, it's Iran, it's Iraq, it will be Pakistan. Don't worry about it. They'll stick the shank in us so deep you won't even believe it. It'll be Jordan, and eventually it's going to be Egypt. The entire Middle Eastern world is comprised of enemy states that need to be neutralized. We need to go to their soil. We need to kill their people the way they killed ours. We need to create explosions on their land the way they did it on ours. We need to strike fear and terror and horror into the hearts of their people the way they did ours. We got to take the game to them. We got to take the war to them. And ever since 9/11, we've been playing at life as if it was still the year 2000 and 1999, with one little exception. We had a really bad time there on 9/11, and, you know, we're going to have to get those Al-Qaeda guys. Those Al-Qaeda guys are, I wouldn't go across the street to pee on any of them, but they're not the only guys that are out there. It's the entire Islamic fundamentalist world. This is not a tough war to fight. This is not a tough war to fight. You listen to guys like Rumsfeld and Bush, and they'd have you believe that we're looking around, and we got to find bin Laden, and we got to find this guy Mohammed. Hey, the entire ruling regime of Iran, the entire ruling regime of Iraq, start there. And you tell them in no uncertain terms. Am I sounding pissed off and hard? You know something? I'm tired. I'm done with it. I'm through with it. We take the handcuffs off of Israel. We take the handcuffs off of India. And as far as I'm concerned, Israel, you do whatever you need to do, baby. And if that means icing Arafat, you do that too. And if that means it escalates into a larger war, it's going to escalate into a larger war whether you like it or not, whether we want it or not. There is no negotiating with these people. They are murdering scum who have laid their claim, the destruction of America. They've wanted Israel destroyed since 1948. They've gone to war against Israel I don't know how many times. The West Bank is controlled by Israel today as the result of the Arab states waging war against Israel. I don't care who attacked first. Nasser, the president of Egypt, said he wanted Israel. He said that the time had come to destroy Israel. Their existence was no longer tolerable. And the Israelis did the only thing logical. They attacked first. They attacked those dumbass Egyptians who loved to talk big but left all of their jets on the ground. They attacked those. They begged Jordan not to attack. They begged them. Jordan attacked. Well, guess what happened? Israel kicked their ass in about 48 hours, and in the process, they got the West Bank. Now, if you want to know why there are Israeli tanks in the West Bank today, it's because the country of Jordan attacked them. Now, all of those lying Arab diplomats, those lying Palestinian diplomats, and all of those negotiators that like to talk about the poor, oppressed Palestinian people, the only thing that oppresses the Palestinian people today are the scumbags like Arafat that run their fortunes, the Arabian Peninsula leaders, the Middle Eastern leaders, the Islamic fundamentalist leaders who claim to have the best interests of the Palestinians at heart and hate them. They hate them. They love to see Palestinians die. The more Palestinians die, the bigger a man guy like that guy that's that sheikh, that turban wrapper in Saudi Arabia looks. The more Palestinians die, the bigger Hussein looks. The more Palestinians die, the bigger the technocrats and theocrats in Iran look. They don't care how many Palestinians die. I don't see Arafat strapping a bomb to his kid. I don't see any of these guys, these Palestinian negotiators, strapping bombs to themselves or their kids. I don't see them strapping bombs to Saddam Hussein. I don't see any of those freaking turban wrappers from Saudi Arabia strapping bombs to themselves. I don't see them strapping bombs to their kids. And they got about 150 kids because they got about 300 wives. I didn't see bin Laden strapping a bomb to himself. If we were any kind of a country adept at any kind of propaganda, the first thing that I would do would drop leaflets or however you want to do it into the West Bank and say, how many of Arafat's kids have strapped bombs to themselves today? How many of the Palestinian leadership has strapped bombs to themselves today? How many of those guys, has Mubarak strapped any bombs to himself? Have any of those guys in Pakistan strapped any bombs to themselves? Have any members of the bin Laden clan strapped any bombs to themselves? They got about 600 kids in that clan alone. We're at war with the entire Islamic fundamentalist world. We're not just at war with Al-Qaeda. And the sooner, and I think the president understands this, I think it scares him. because I think it necessitates very clear action. And the very clear action that it necessitates is a de facto, if you want, state of war, or a stated state of war exists between us and at least, Iran and Iraq. In the very least. War, a state of war exists between us and those states. Now, why we pretend like it isn't so, I don't know. And why we pretend like it's just Al-Qaeda, I don't get it. I think it's because the president doesn't want to alarm the American people. I think that if the truth was spoken as clearly as I hope I've just expressed it, it would be scary. Now, here's something else. When you're at war, a democracy goes to war, certain elements of civil liberties begin to get a little bit tightened in and drawn in. Now, if you don't want to be profiled, that's too bad. If you are a young Middle Eastern man between the ages of 18 and 33, you come from countries known to sponsor terrorism, and you're here on a student visa, you're going to get stopped and you're going to get searched. And individuals who think that we can still indulge in the luxury of arguing cases before the Supreme Court concerning civil liberties. We are a democracy at war. We are not a totalitarian state at war, but we are a democracy and we are at war. And sometimes even the extreme liberties that we allow our people have to be drawn in a little bit to preserve what we got. These totalitarian states, well, it's just, they nobody's got a right over there anyway. And don't worry about it. Pakistan is a fundamentalist state waiting to happen. They got a president over there who's a military dictator who is trying to play ball with those guys. That's why he's playing hard ass with the Indians. He's going to get his ass kicked. And then he's going to lose his regime. And then the fundamentalists are going to take over anyway. It's only a matter of time. And then we're going to have to deal with them. There'll be a fundamentalist state with nuclear weapons. Musharraf is a guy, he's on borrowed time. He's trying to keep those militants off of his ass by playing hardball with the Indians. And all that has happened over there, by the way, and don't make any mistake about it, are Islamic fundamentalist militants invading India and murdering Indian citizens. That's all it is. You know, it's no, don't even worry about it, okay? Don't worry about how it's, you know, the Indians are doing. That's what's going on. They've gone into their parliament and murdered people there. They've come across the border and murdered soldiers and their family members. That's what it's about. And Musharraf ain't going to do anything about it. He's not doing anything about it because he's scared crapless that the militants that are in his own country will topple him from power. Now, that's it in a nutshell. Don't even worry about it. And India's had it up to here. By the way, that's another democracy. India, Israel, America. Anybody see a pattern here? The fundamentalists want a pan-Islamic empire that is totalitarian in nature, that is theocratic in nature, that returns to a day when women were getting their hands cut off and being beaten, and men were being beaten, and you couldn't watch a movie, and you couldn't listen to music. They want to go back to the way it was. Why? Because the future scares old men. And that's what they are. We're at war with all of them. And the sooner that I hear the President of the United States say something about it in clear terms, the better I'm going to be about it, because it ain't just Al-Qaeda. It's the whole kit and caboodle of them, and Israel is doing their fight right now against them. India's about to get into a shooting match with them, and we better jump in with both feet, too. 1-800-449-8686. That's my Declaration of Independence here. I'm just going to talk the way I want to talk, when I want to talk, and how I want to talk. It's the Phil Henry Show.
Show.
You know, they had another car bombing in Israel today, and everybody thinks this is a product of, like, there's the Hezbollah over here and the Al-Qaeda there, and there's another group over there. Hey, they all hate your guts. They all want to ruin this country, Israel, any country that is democratic, any country that has clean streets and beautiful shopping malls, and any country, in other words, that isn't Islamic. They want to destroy, but specifically America and Israel. Who are they? Islamic fundamentalists, if you want to call them that. Scum, whatever you want to call them. But they're all part of the same team. Al-Qaeda, I don't care. You can call them Al-Qaeda if you want to. Al-Qaeda flew a plane into a building. They murdered 3,000 people. But you think that that was just bin Laden. That wasn't just bin Laden. That was Saddam Hussein. That was the Martyrs Brigade. That was every single solitary Islamic fundamentalist over there. And I'm trying really, really hard not to just say Islamic. I'm trying really hard. I'm trying really hard not to just say the entire Islamic faith is somehow corrupt. If they have created, fostered, nurtured, and fertilized such a murderous philosophy as this, that somehow it's justified in the Quran to go out and butcher up human beings like a coward. And I can't hit this point enough. I really think it needs mentioning. The fact that our guys go up into the mountains there in eastern Afghanistan, our 10th Mountain and our airborne guys, ready to engage Al-Qaeda. That's what they wanted. They wanted to fight our guys mano a mano. The Mujahideen said, wait till you get on the ground. Wait till you put your boots on the ground. Wait till we fight you guys down on our turf. You'll see. You'll know. You'll watch. You wait. You just wait and see. Well, there we were. We were walking around waiting for them. We're walking around. 10th Mountain, airborne. All the guys are there. And what are they doing? The Al-Qaeda guys are up in the caves waggling their ears and, kind of putting their thumbs in their ears and going, boo, and then running back into the cave. I mean, these people are absolutely, if nothing else, only adept at one thing, blowing themselves up. They're good at blowing themselves up. They're so frustrated over the fact that they don't know how to use a firearm, but they hate us so much because we've had such a successful civilization for so long, and they have been such a civilization of losers that the only thing they know how to do is just out of frustration, blow themselves up. And then they decided, hey, I got a good idea. What's that, Ahmed? If I blow myself up, I can do it standing next to one of them, and that'll blow them up too. Oh, okay. Aha! We have the weapon. What are you going to do? I'm going to blow myself up standing next to one of the infidel. Then they'll see. They wag their fingers at the camera. They wear headbands. They got their beards. They look into the camera with images of the World Trade Center burning behind them, and they wag their finger, and they talk with confidence about what they're going to do to the West. And so far, the only thing they know how to do is blow themselves up. They're not warriors. They're barely men. And they're all in the same bag, as far as I'm concerned. Every last Islamic scumbag, one of them. And the sooner America goes to war against all of them, all of them. Now, is that scary? Yes, it is. Is it a war that we would win? Absolutely. If we understand what it's about, you have to understand our country's survival is what's at stake. You don't believe me? Do you think it's a coincidence that on all fronts now we see armies moving against free people? You think it's a coincidence that they've stepped it up against Israel with this trumped up baloney about Israel being an occupied territory? As I said before, the West Bank was part of Jordan. Jordan attacked Israel. Israel said, well, we'll attack you back. And guess what? We got some of your land now. Army of occupation, army of oppression. It's the only democracy over there. You know where the real oppression is? It's in Iran, it's in Iraq, it's in Jordan, it's in Syria, it's in Saudi Arabia, where one-tenth of the nation's population lives in opulence and the rest of them live in poverty. They're the worst, absolute worst hypocrites the world has ever seen. You think it's a coincidence that India's got to do battle now with these maniacs in Pakistan? You think it's a coincidence that 3,000 of our people got butchered up in New York? You think that this is all just kind of independent action here? These things are unrelated? This is the Islamic world rising up because they can't stand themselves and they need to bring other people down. And the time is now for us to put fear into them, to make things explode on their land, to put fear into their citizens, to make them not want to go to sleep without one eye open. Or maybe I'm wrong. Phil Hendry Show.
One 1-800-449-8686. And now more on The Phil Hendry Show.
All right, as you heard last half hour, I am calling for a declaration of war by the United States on at least the countries of Iran and Iraq, as well as on any Islamic fundamentalist regime that is supporting terror. I'm not talking about lip service like the president seems to be paying it. I'm talking about either a declaration of war, some kind of an overt statement public that we are now at war with any country. David G. Hall is the vice president of syndication for the show, has called and says that you wanted to comment, David?
Yes. Let me explain something to you, Phil, about what's going on right now. The Laker game is on. People are...
Wait. I wanted to talk about...
Hold on for a minute, because I happen to be the head of programming for your division. The Laker game is on. People are out picnicking. It's a beautiful evening. People are not aware that we need to go to war with anybody. They think we're at war with Al-Qaeda.
I understand, but...
Wait. Just listen to me. I turn my radio on. I'm in my car right now. I'm on my way to South Pasadena. I turn my radio on, and I hear you talking about declarations of war, explosions, killing people, and I can't believe my ears.
David.
Phil, we hired you to entertain people. Where is Bobby Dooley? Where is Jay Santos? Where are all the wonderful characters on your show? Where are all of them? We hired you to entertain people, not to throw this stuff up in their face. They don't want to know about that.
People listen to talk radio to be informed.
No, they don't.
They don't.
No, they don't.
Why do they listen?
They listen to be entertained. I'm telling you something. I'm beside myself listening to this on my radio station. You talking about World War III, when the people out there that listen to your program have heard the president, we're going after Al-Qaeda, that's all they need to know. Why are you stirring them up?
I believe...
Why are you stirring them up? Don't give me your philosophy of why you believe we ought to declare war on whoever you said. Why are you stirring up the listeners with talk of war?
Because it's the bigger picture, okay?
What bigger picture? What are you talking about? You're hired to entertain people, not stir the people up with war talk and talking about how we're going to go to war with Iran and go to war with Iraq and we're at war with... Do you know how many Arabs we got listening? Do you? We got Arab Americans listening to your broadcast. We've got Muslims listening to your broadcast. What do you think I got to deal with tomorrow morning when they call in and say that they heard Phil Hendry saying that America is at war with Muslims? You're a comic. You're not a political host. You know, this always happens when funny people get big heads. It's like seeing Carrot Top on Nightline. You know...
Would you... I'm trying to...
You are a comic. You're not a commentator.
Bobby Dooley's... Bobby?
Yes, I heard Steve and I are here. I heard David Hall mention...
Hello, Bobby.
Yes, David. Do you agree with me? Phil?
Yes.
I'm here, Steve and I agree with David, and I'll tell you why. We are a little put off by this saber-rattling and this talk of all-out war. We have, in our community, Western Estates, our summer tacular coming up. There's a universe of things that we could talk about.
What about swimsuits? What about barbecues?
Israel had a car bombing today.
No, but, Phil, the thing that concerns me, David...
Yes.
Is this, where did you, Phil, are you there?
I'm here.
Can I ask you a question?
Yes.
Why all of this support for, and I want you to know something, I live around a lot of them, but why all of this support for Jews? Is your wife Jewish?
No, she's not Jewish. It's got nothing to do with it.
Well, why all of a sudden, Phil, I don't understand the strident support for Jews. I mean,
Israel has been a... Oh, my God, I feel like I'm alone.
Why all the Jew talk?
You mean Jew talk?
No, what Steve's saying is, there's a lot. You're making a lot of people uncomfortable.
Yeah, it does.
Are you trying to sell your house to a Jewish couple? Or?
No, I'm not. Israel got attacked in a car bombing today.
Well, then let the Jews worry about that. We live in a wonderful country. We have millions of Jews here, and they can worry about that. But Phil, frankly, I'm a little concerned. All of this support for Jews, and
it's not support for Jews. It's support for a free people.
Were you circumcised?
What?
Were you circumcised?
Were you circumcised?
What has that got to do with anything?
I just feel we have so much to be thankful for. We really do.
Think of all the things we got to be thankful for.
Well, I think she's making a good point. Listen to me. Football camp starts in August. We're going on a Disney cruise, Steve and I and the boys. Our 4th of July barbecue. Janice Greeley, who got a terrible infection from her last abortion, I'm nursing her, and I really need to...
Look at all of this stuff. Doesn't matter.
Are you listening to this lady, though? She's making sense.
It doesn't matter. I'm talking about political elements, okay?
See, this is what I'm talking about. The stuff that people are really interested in. You come on and talk about war when you can divert attention with talk about barbecues and the summer testicular. Summertacular.
Man, isn't it our job to inform?
No. I keep telling you, our job is to take people's minds off these things so they aren't troubled by them. God. I'm losing my voice talking to you. Do you understand?
You don't want me to talk about Israel and India, Pakistan?
No, because the people out there don't care. All they want to talk about are barbecues. Where's the, there's Dooley, did you fax it in? Yes, I did. Where's that recipe?
What recipe?
She faxed in a recipe. So I faxed in a buttermilk carrot cake recipe that I wanted to talk about. Craig, you got the music?
Wait a second.
Craig, you got the music?
Yes, he says he's got the music.
Okay. I want you to talk to her. Now,
wait a minute. This is my show here, okay?
No, talk to her about the carrot cake. Go. Okay, Phil, I'm ready.
Ready for what? I'm talking about... Look, at what I'm talking to you guys about is...
Hi, everybody. I'm Bobby Dooley. It's summer.
Wait a minute!
Yes, it's time for summer, and what's a better time for a buttermilk carrot cake than summertime? I'm Bobby Dooley from Western Estates, and here with me is Phil Hendry. Go, Phil! Here with me is Phil Hendry.
Yes, hi, Bobby. I want to talk about Israel.
Well, what we're going to do right now is give you the ingredients, Phil. Phil, give the ingredients. Give the ingredients. So help me God, Henry. I'm coming down there, and I'll throw you through a window.
Butter for preparing your pan, 2 cups of flour, plus more for the pan, 2 teaspoons of baking soda, 2 teaspoons...
That's good enough. Now, heat the oven to 350 degrees. Lightly butter and flour a 13 by 9 inch baking pan. Here's my husband, Steve, to tell you more.
Yeah, you gotta lightly butter and grease the pan. And that means the baking pan, too.
Oh, Steve. Now,
Oh, man.
Now, sift together the flour, the baking soda, and the cinnamon. Steve?
Then you take a banana, put the banana in a mixing bowl, and whip it around until it makes whipped cream.
Oh, my God, you are terrible. We'll be right back with more here on Cooking and More. From Western Estates, Phil?
I'm talking about Israel, Pakistan...
Nobody wants to hear about that! Mr. Hill, he's really messing up my segment. I understand.
Turn it off. Turn it off!
Oh my God, Phil, you really...
1-800-449-8686. This is the Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry, 1-800-449-8686.
Nobody wants to hear about Israel. It's a bunch of crap.
I'm talking about this stuff on the show because it's in the headlines right now.
It's not what people want to hear about. 98% of all Americans don't even know where the Middle East is, and you're talking about it? They couldn't find it on a map with both hands. Now take a phone call.
1-800-449-8686, Phil Henry Show. Sylvia, go ahead. You're on the Phil Henry Show.
Hello, are you talking to me?
Yes, ma'am, go ahead.
All right, may I ask a question?
Yes, dear.
What is the capacity of that moron that's your assistant, whatever the hell he
is? Wait a minute, you're talking about me?
I'm talking about you. Get the hell off the phone. I want to talk to Phil.
He is the program, he is the vice president of syndication for my show.
What's his IQ? 10?
You called me a moron.
Yes, you talk like one.
How do I talk like one?
You talk like a moron. You try to impress the people you're talking to like you're very educated, but I think you have to go back to school and learn your history. Shut up and listen.
I know stuff.
Just shut up and listen for once. You talk too much. Listen a little bit more.
I talk too much?
Yes.
You know where the Middle East is?
Do I? I've been there 3 times.
Yeah, but do you know where it is?
No, it's in the moon up there. I don't want to answer your question.
Don't make no sense.
I told
right.
you I wanted
it. Yes, go ahead,
are you
Sylvia.
The boss there? I mean,
I'm the boss of Mr. Henry, okay?
And you are. Excuse me. May I get an answer? Are you with Phil Henry's boss?
Yes, I am.
Do you own the station?
Do I own the station? I own the show.
You are.
You want to get tough about it?
No, I'm asking a question. I'm not telling you anything.
Are you Jewish? Are you Jewish?
That's none of your business.
See, that's why you're getting upset.
You don't know a damn thing about what I am.
You're Jewish and you're bumming out.
Watch your language, Sylvia, if you wouldn't mind.
I know. If I know how to spell it, I can say it.
Listen to the potty mouth on her, will you?
You know what? You know what he is,
Phil. You know what, Sylvia? Nobody
Excuse
needs
me,
to
shut up. I want to talk to Phil. Phil?
Yes, ma'am.
I mean this sincerely.
You know, one of the things that I want to say...
Well, just shut your mouth for 2 seconds.
Go ahead, Sylvia.
What I want to know is, what is his capacity?
Over there in Iran, you can't
he won't
do
shut his mouth. Is he going to shut his mouth for 2 minutes?
Shut up, David.
You tell me to shut up?
May I ask a question,
No
Phil?
One tells me to shut up.
Be quiet. Yes, go ahead, Sylvia.
Does he own the station?
No.
What does he own there? I mean, what's his capacity?
I own Phil Henry's ASS.
That's what you are.
I'm a what?
That's exactly what you just spoke is what you are. You're an ignorant ass.
I'm an ignorant ass.
Yes.
Look, nobody wants to talk about Pakistan and all that baloney.
This has nothing to do with Pakistan and all that baloney. I simply wanted to ask Phil Henry a couple of questions, if you don't mind.
What about me? Don't you want to ask me
questions? No, I'm going to ask him about you. I don't have to ask you.
I'm a fascinating guy.
Excuse me, do you own the station?
No, I don't own the station.
Well, what is your capacity there?
I am the vice president of syndication in charge of production programming schedules.
Of what? The whole... of
the subsection.
Of the whole radio station?
Subsection 4.
What is that?
That's the delineation of the production manual. So what we do is we move in and out of those areas. And I am the one that more or less is the gatekeeper for subsection 6.
In other words,
Division 3.
If you keep quiet for 5 minutes,
we
maybe you'll be able to answer your question.
I'm trying to give it a whole answer, okay?
No, you don't have to. Just what I asked.
Right,
Do you own
Division 4, not Division 3, I'm sorry.
Do you own the station?
Do I own the station?
Yes.
What state, what caller?
You're WLRN, or you're the New York station that you're talking from.
Yeah, I'm a New York station.
Where Phil Henry is talking from.
Where Phil Henry is talking out of right now is WACK in New York.
Not WLRN?
No, WLRN's picking it up. We're at WACK New York.
Are you talking from New York now?
I'm speaking from New York right now.
Where in New York?
Amazing?
Because I'm a New Yorker, you know, before I lived in Florida.
Have you ever heard of Brooklyn?
Will you listen for two minutes?
I went to
Brooklyn College.
I'm in a place called Flatbush.
Listen to me.
Will you listen to the lady?
No, I heard you. You're from Flatbush.
She doesn't know.
You're from the same neighborhood I am.
I'm from Flatbush.
That's where I'm from. I'm from Flatbush.
Right. Alphabet City.
Okay, listen to me.
Alphabet City. And it's in New York.
Would you listen a minute? Would you answer my question? Would you come up for air?
What do you need?
I have a few questions I wanted answered. That's all.
Well, sure.
Oh, thank you very much. I'm from Brooklyn. I'm a graduate. Would you listen? Would you please listen? I'm a graduate of Lincoln High School and Brooklyn College.
I never heard of it.
You never heard of Lincoln High School and Brooklyn College?
I don't.
And you come from Brooklyn?
No, wait a minute. Are you sure that's in Brooklyn?
Of course. Where else is it?
No, I don't.
Lincoln High School is in Brighton.
No. Nobody's ever heard of it.
Nobody's heard of Brighton, near Coney Island.
No, ma'am.
You never heard of Coney Island?
No, ma'am.
Come on, you're pulling my leg.
I'm not pulling your leg.
Well, Phil Henry knows Coney Island.
Yeah,
ask
I know
him.
Coney Island. Yeah, that's great.
Thank you.
Yeah,
do you know Brooklyn? And I went to Brooklyn College.
Where's that?
In Brooklyn, near Flatbush Avenue, not far.
Is that in Brooklyn?
Yes. That's why it's called Brooklyn College.
You're making this up?
Look, where are we going with all of this, okay?
Because I wanted
to talk about
Brooklyn. I wanted to know.
We're
because,
in Brooklyn.
Bill,
we're
I wanted
in New York.
To know I'm from Brooklyn. That's all.
Yeah, okay.
That I'm familiar with what he...
All right. Well, that's very good. And
were you a rock kid?
Never mind.
I mean, he's trying, you know, he's trying to get... I know, he's pulling my leg. I know,
Sylvia, I'm not pulling your leg.
If you're going to talk like a person, don't talk like an moron.
I think you're lying. I don't think you're from Brooklyn.
You don't think I'm from...
No, I
grew up in Benson. Wait a minute.
You're a liar.
I went to Lincoln High School. I went to Brooklyn College.
You're a liar.
I'm a liar. I just told you. You know Lincoln High School in Brighton.
All right. I can't do that voice. By the way, the voice of David Hall, the voice of Bobby Dooley, the voice of Ted Bell in today's show, all performed by me. All right, our number is 1-800-449-8686. I don't know. Where else do you go with Sylvia, you know? She's something else, man. She's the Ruth of the modern era. Those of you who were around with us in the early days, you remember Ruth. Well, now we got Sylvia. She's too much. Hey, don't forget our website, philhenryshow.com. In fact...
Hi, everyone. I'm Bobby Dooley, reminding you to get a backstage pass at philhenryshow.com. You can listen to all of the wonderful characters from Phil's show, whether it's me...
Or me, Steve Dooley.
Or me, Harvey Wireman.
Or me, Jay Santas. Or me, Steve Bozell.
Steve has a backstage pass, don't you, Steve?
Word.
Yes, it's the Phil Henry website. philhenryshow.com. For $6.95 a month, you get all of our wonderfully scintillating comedy right here on the Phil Henry Show. Is that it?
Yeah, that's it. You did a great job. Yeah, philhenryshow.com, philhenryshow.com. Get your Ted's of Beverly Hills bowling shirt, and don't forget the best of Phil Henry. And that's our CD. All the proceeds go to my friend's place, a resource center for homeless and runaway kids in Hollywood.
Phil Henry, 1-800-449-8686.
Because I've been out there.
And you've lived out there a long time?
Yes, I have.
All right, we're on the air, Steve, so hold on for just a second. 1-800-449-8686. Phil Henry Show, it's summertime and the kids are outdoors. And many of you families out there have pets. But pets, according to our next guest, they're not really what they're cracked up to be. Mr. Stephen J. Bozell of Corona, California is on with us. How are you, sir?
Very well, Mr. Henry. Thank you for having me on your program.
Okay, and have you had pets before?
No, sir. I've not had pets. I've never been really a pet person, but I'm not much for animals. But I can tell you this: I've got a pretty little 10-year-old daughter,
and she's the one who wanted the dog, huh?
Yes, sir. She did, and I would go to the ends of the earth for her. As far as I'm concerned, she hung the moon up. And when she said to me, "Daddy, can I have a dog?" I said, "Of course you can." And
But you're not into animals.
I'm not really. I hear people say I got a dog, I got a cat, I got a rabbit, or this kind of thing, and I sort of grit my teeth and just sort of let it pass because there's sometimes it's almost like a wave of nausea. That's
interesting. Why is that?
Well, I've never liked them. I guess I've never been an animal person. I think that animals are dirty and they're sort of take over everything. I mean, I'm a human being, so why shouldn't people? My philosophy is, I'm a human being. Why shouldn't people pay more attention to me? But instead, they'll pay more attention to the animal, and I don't like that kind of selfishness from the animal. But
you were willing to get your daughter a dog.
Yes, sir.
And you got your wife, and you went over to a kennel.
My wife and I went over to Gingham Kennels. That's in Woodland Hills.
Go ahead, just tell the story.
Well, we got a little dachshund, what you call one of these wiener dog, or the dog looked like a wiener, and they're short hair. And my thinking was, how can a little wiener-sized dog like that get any attention away from me or the humans?
This was a concern of yours, that the dog would be dirty and would be distracting people from paying attention to the humans in the house.
Well, that's true. But again, a little dachshund could not be that much of a problem, so we got her this dachshund.
And your daughter was happy?
Oh, she was ecstatic. She loved it, and she loved it very much.
Now, you had an encounter with a neighbor, Mr. So your daughter has her dog, which is this little dachshund pup, right?
It's a little pup.
Yeah, all right. Now, you had an encounter with a neighbor, Mr. Roy Hutchins?
That's correct. He was at on the back fence, which borders my property. He has a stepladder, so he can get up on the ladder and look over, which I've always not really appreciated him just looking over the fence and staring at me, because I don't enjoy someone staring at me from over a fence.
Well, do you guys talk, though?
We've talked on occasion. And
so he's talking with you.
Yeah, well, my daughter encouraged me to pick the dog up. So we're out back, and we have the dog. And I was holding the dog, and Mr. Hutchins says to me, and I have the notes because I wrote them down. My attorney advised me, too. He says, if I could read them to you.
Go right ahead, sir.
He said, "Hey, Bozell, what have you got there?" And I said to him, "What's it look like?" "It's a dog."
And that's the instant where the dog urinated on you.
The animal urinated on my shirt right down the front. I'm just sort of...
Are you remembering it?
It's coming back to me now, how it just peed down the front of my shirt.
Because you were holding this little pup up in front of you, right?
That is correct. And that's when I believe Mr. Hutchins did something unconscionable, and he began laughing at me, and he laughed at me in front of my daughter and in front of the animal. And he laughed so hard that apparently he fell off the ladder because I could not see it.
All right, now you are suing Gingham Kennels for selling you a dog that would urinate on you.
The animal caused me not only personal property destruction, but mental distress.
Because the animal peed on you, you feel you were...
Yes, sir. Mr. Henry, I tell you to take these things seriously.
Okay, and because the kennel did not advise you as to the dog urinating on you?
I believe that it could have advised me. It's possible this dog, depending upon how you handle it, it's going to pee down in front of you. So,
be forewarned.
Be forewarned.
You're also suing your neighbor, Mr. Hutchins.
Yes, sir. The lawsuit encompasses Mr. Hutchins' humiliation of me in front of my daughter, mental cruelty. He laughed at me in front of the dog. The dog's already getting enough attention. Now he laughs at me in front of the dog, which can only empower the dog to urinate on me or at some future point defecate. Because if the dog sees that it's funny, what will he do now? And I have to think about that.
All right, let me get this. So if the dog sees that he amused this neighbor by peeing on you, next time he may take a crap on you.
Next time, I don't know. And I don't know whether animals quantify things that way.
All right. Stephen Bozell is my guest. He's from Corona, California. He's suing a kennel that sold him a dog, a pet dachshund, a little dachshund dog that urinated on him in front of his daughter, and you're also suing your next-door neighbor for laughing at you.
Well, it's mostly mental cruelty and mental humiliation for laughing at me in front of the daughter, and also...
And you think his laughter encourages the dog now in the future to further urinate?
To behave in a way that is probably going to cost me money because I'll have to send it to obedience school.
All right, 1-800-449-8686. 1-800-449-8686. My producer Mike Schaefer grew up in a home where there was a lot of dog training, and your dad is involved, Mike, in training animals, isn't he? Training dogs, gone to dog shows, and I know that certain kinds of dogs perhaps have a better temperament than others.
Well, this little tiny dog probably thought he was going to make me look like a fool in front of my daughter.
Well, small dogs are also temperamental, aren't they?
That is correct.
Now, the part of your lawsuit that is disturbing to me, I have to be honest with you, you've named your daughter.
Yes, sir, I have.
Why would you sue your own daughter?
I will tell you, sir, I went round and round with this one. And
but why would you do it?
I came to the conclusion of what kind of a man would it be if I backed down from, even if it's my daughter, if I backed down. She asked for the dog. She encouraged me to pick the dog up. I pick it up. Now it urinates all down the front of a bowling shirt that it was a Nat Nass bowling shirt, too. It's a very, very expensive bowling shirt. I don't know if you're familiar.
I know Nat Nass bowling shirts. They're very good.
Sorry, okay, so that's like a $150, $200 shirt. The dog urinates down the front of a Nat Nass, which is an original bowling shirt. And she knew that maybe that, and if it wasn't for her there, there'd be no dog, and my daughter would not be splitting her affection between me and the dog.
When you sue your own daughter, and forgive me, but let's say we live on a different planet and they rule in your favor, what are you hoping to get?
Well, you're making it sound like my case has no merit, okay, and that's bullshit.
Okay, watch your language, sir. We had to dump that, all right?
I'm sorry, but I think that you're trying to...
I'm not saying that. I think it's a stretch.
Well, you think it's... Look, I'm just hoping to teach the child a lesson, so it's not about money. Although I'm asking for a judgment against her for the shirt, because that's a $200 bowling shirt.
A judgment of $200 against your daughter for a bowling shirt.
But that's something that can work out of allowance or something like that.
You're also suing Gingham Kennels and Roy Hutchins for how much?
We are asking for $250,000.
And that is for?
For the pain of having an animal pee on me in front of the daughter and laughing at me and making me look like a fool in front of the dog.
Well, you keep mentioning this dog, okay? And I seriously doubt if the dog can be encouraged to further disrespect you because it amused a neighbor by peeing on you.
I'll tell you, Mr. Henry, ever since the incident, the dog has not shown me any respect. It thinks I'm lower than it on the pack, and that's the way dogs are. They're pack mentality animals. I woke up this morning, to give an example, I looked down, and there's the dog staring at me, just looking and looking, always staring, always staring. It was my consideration. I had talked to my attorney as to whether you can actually sue a dog. And
okay, now you're suing your daughter. You're going to sue a dog. You cannot sue a dog. You can't tell me you actually...
You can put into the court record your dissatisfaction with the dog. And you can technically sue the dog for destruction of personal property, intentional infliction of emotional distress, and have it on the record. And I could... Oh, and I looked at the dog after it peed on me, and I said, you know, I can own you and the doghouse.
Don't you already own the dog and the doghouse?
I do own the doghouse, but in the state of California, you cannot legally evict for 30 days.
So wait. You want to throw the dog out of its own doghouse? You got to wait. You don't have to wait 30 days. It's a dog.
In the state of California, you must wait 30 days before you can intentionally evict any
person. It's not a dog. The dog you can throw out.
Not my understanding.
So in other words, you're going to go get an eviction notice and hang it up on your own dog's doghouse? Is he going to be able to read it?
No, you just have to post it legally. I don't think I'm going to get anything out of the dog. What I'm trying to say is put it in the court record that the dog peed on me, that there's every possibility things going to take a dump on me at some point. But mostly I want to go after Gingham Kennels for the dog selling me a dog that's going to make me look like a fool. That's all.
Everything about your lawsuit makes sense to a point. Suing your daughter, I don't get. But try to put into the court record that you want to sue a dog. You know...
Well, you talked to my attorney, Dolores Blasingame of Riverside, California. And I'm not saying I can get anything out of the dog. I'm saying what am I supposed to do?
All right. 1-800-449-8686. This is a guy that doesn't like animals, by the way. He said that he doesn't like animals. His pet dachshund urinates on him in front of a neighbor and his own daughter, and he wants to sue. Sue his neighbor, sue the kennel. He's even talked about suing his own daughter for laughing at him and put into the court record that he'd like to sue the dog if it was a human being because of the emotional distress. And I asked him, what would you sue the dog for? Destruction of personal property and intentional infliction of emotional distress. 1-800-449-8686, The Phil Hendry Show.
The Phil Hendry Show is back. 1-800-449-8686.
Okay, Steve Bozell is a homeowner in Corona, California, and allegedly a, well, not allegedly, you were a dog owner.
The dachshund dog.
And this dachshund peed on the front of your shirt. Your neighbor laughed at you, and you feel that's also encouraged the dog to show further disrespect.
Well, I mean, the way people are talking about me,
No, no, you think the dog is going to show you further?
I think that if you, I'm not saying the dog's intelligent, but you, if a dog pees on you or takes, craps a load on you, and then a human being laughs, the dog's going to see that and go, well, the human approves of that.
So he'll continue to urinate or take a crap on you?
That is my fear.
Okay, we got a few people calling in. Can we take some calls?
I can't. I don't have a lot of time.
Okay, we'll just take a couple of calls here. 1-800-449-8686. Patty, you're on the Phil Hendry Show. Hello?
Hello.
Hold on, Patty. Are you at work, Mr. Bozell?
Yes, sir, I am. I'm awfully sorry.
Well, because it's a little noisy over there. Go ahead, Patty.
Okay, I actually had to call in to find out if this was a serious talk show or not. Because I just can't believe someone would actually
One of the things
file
is,
a lawsuit against their own daughter and a dog.
I'm trying to teach the child a lesson, that's all. I don't think that's very unusual for the child to urge me to bring into my home a dog that would urinate on me.
But you're the adult.
I am the adult, and I said, yes, you may have the dog, but I've never been a dog lover. She knew that. I've never been a pet lover. She knew that. And yet she still wanted to bring the pet in to maybe see if the dog would humiliate me. And
How old is your daughter?
My daughter's 10.
Well, wait a minute. You at the beginning said you love your daughter. Why would she want to humiliate you?
I don't think she's thinking in terms of humiliation. I think she thinks it's just funny that the dog peed down a brand new Nat Nass bowling shirt.
Oh, my God.
Well, what, ma'am, when you become a mother, I think you'll be able to understand a little bit better how these things happen.
Okay, sir.
All right.
And thank
you. You're a dog owner.
I am both.
Have a dog urinate on you, you think that's a good thing? I don't think so.
No, it's not a good thing, but, I mean, it's a dog. It's an animal. It's not a human being.
I understand that, but how often do dogs lift their leg and purposely let a stream of pee go on a human without thinking, I don't respect the human?
Well, look, there is a thing called pack mentality, and dogs have a little pecking order.
Well, the dog was trying to show it's better than me. That's what I'm saying.
I don't buy it.
Oh, you don't buy it. Then why would the dog urinate all over me?
Because it's a puppy and it's not trained yet.
Brand new bowling shirt? How do you explain that?
It understands that it's a $150 bowling shirt?
What about that, Steve?
It made that choice?
What about that?
I would say...
What if he had a ratty old T-shirt on? It wouldn't have peed on it because it wasn't worth anything?
I mean, the dog cannot look at a shirt and say, hey, brand new bowling shirt.
Price tag, ding, ding, ding.
There was a price tag on a shirt before I put it on. And the animal had been in the house.
Okay.
So, I'm glad if you don't understand, when you get a dog, you'll understand.
What do you mean there was a price tag on the shirt before you got it into the house? So the dog was wandering by.
The dog was in the living room. The shirt was laying out. My wife had bought it for me.
Are you getting emotional because...
I'm getting emotional because people don't seem to understand.
All right, I mean, but the dog can't see the price. And maybe the dog can see the price. Maybe the dog can even see that it's $150. Maybe the dog knows what $150 is. There's no way you can tell me the dog's thinking, $150, that's a lot for a shirt. I think I'll pee on it, ruin it, and establish who's the head.
I'm not saying he did that. I'm hoping, pray he didn't do that. I would pray to Jesus, and I'm a Christian, that he would not. If he did that, it'd be some kind of a strange world.
You better believe it'd be a strange world we live in. Alan, you're on the Phil Hendry Show. Hello.
This is Alan.
Yes, sir.
The guy you got on, he's worried about disrespect. He's even more disrespectful following the lawsuit.
How do you figure that, sir? I use the legal system of this country.
How about if you just laugh at yourself? A dog is going to pee. Doesn't matter what kind of shirt you have on.
I'm totally aware of that, sir. What I do not appreciate, though, is the dog urinating on a brand new bowling shirt and being encouraged to do that. I don't have a problem with the dog so much as I got a problem with my next door neighbor encouraging the animal.
Well, if I was there, I would have laughed too.
Well,
you probably would have been filing a lawsuit against me. It's a dog.
All that does
he's gonna pee.
All that does encourage the animal. And I would ask you, what if it happened to you?
Then I'd laugh too.
You'd laugh.
I'd laugh and say, hey, that's what a dog does. Go get a new shirt.
Sir, I don't think so. I don't think that you'd laugh if your neighbor's laughing at you.
I'd laugh, too. It's funny. Dog peed on you. Don't you have kids, right? Didn't your kids pee on you when they had their diaper on? You going to sue them? Or are you going to sue the hospital because they gave you a kid?
That's why I put a diaper on a child, so the child cannot humiliate me.
Well, piss comes through a diaper sometimes.
But not the ones we use, the Huggy Ocean Breeze. They are plastic reinforced. I've never had a child urine on me.
Yeah, but it doesn't stop the funk.
No.
That stink is going to come through.
The stink gets all over me, then me and the kid have got a problem.
Yeah, then you got to go sue the hospital. You got to sue the diaper company.
I got a problem.
You just
got
to take responsibility and say, hey, that mess happened.
Why would I sue the hospital?
Because they gave you a kid who doesn't know how to pee when it's not in your arms.
There. See, this Alan's making perfect sense. And
what I think is going on here is you gentlemen don't understand what happened. And
well, you explained it to us. You went outside. Your daughter said, pick up the dog.
My daughter said, pick up the dog, Daddy, because she wanted to get a picture. She had our Instamatic camera. I pick up the dog. I got Hutchins over here who says, what do you got there? I said, well, what's it look like? Because he's always asking stupid questions. And the dog pees on me.
Next time, go get your $5 shirt and pick up the dog.
I'd sue my wife, not the hospital. She birthed the peeing kid. You don't sue the hospital, by the way.
They sent it. Well, you delivered it at the hospital. They got to be responsible.
You technically are right that they allowed it to go home. Yes, you are technically.
Oh, will you come on?
What?
The hospital allowed the kid to go home, and so therefore...
They should have potty trained that thing at the hospital.
Either one of you boys want to talk to my attorney, Dolores Blazingame, she explained the law to you, that's fine with me.
Well, if you don't understand that the attorney's just trying to get money, that this is a baseless lawsuit,
I understand.
Then you're the fool.
No, I understand there are a lot of attorneys like that. Dolores Blazingame has helped me with many legal problems.
You know, he just said something. She may be trying to get money out of you. Thank you for your call, okay?
Sir, you're virgin on slander.
Oh, come on, slander. It's a speculation that maybe, just maybe, she's trying to get some money out of you. Toby on the Phil Henry Show. Hello.
Hi, I just think that this poor gentleman has a self-esteem problem.
Well, you can call what you want, Dr. Laura, but dog's not going to get away with peeing on me.
Well, why did you pick the dog up?
What was that, on Oprah today? Self-esteem?
Well, hold on for a minute.
What is self-esteem? Do you know what it is?
Something you saw on Oprah today.
No, it isn't.
Oh, it isn't? What'd you see on Oprah today?
I didn't see Oprah. I'm sitting in my car in traffic, and I have a dog in the back seat.
How do you vacuum your trailer out? You know,
my house is probably a hell of a lot cleaner than yours.
You know, lady, you got to know how deep the water is before you get in.
I know how deep the water is.
Okay.
I've had kids and dogs.
All right. They ever crap on you?
Nope, because I train them.
Okay, there you go.
And I don't pick them up when they're puppies.
Okay.
And I don't wear 150-dollar bowling shirt.
All right, but if the dog did pee on you, you do see my right to sue.
No, I don't. I can sue my daughter. My daughter is to me.
Why? You don't know what you're talking about then. You just said no dog has ever peed on you. So
Dogs pee on my cat trunks. I've had dogs pee on my furniture.
Okay, both of you guys, back off your phones, all right?
God damn it.
All right, thank you for your call. Back off the phones. 1-800-449-8686. Once you have a dog pee on you, then you'll know what I'm talking about. Phil Henry Show.
And now more on the Phil Henry Show.
Phil Henry here and Steve Bozell, and he wants to sue a kennel for selling him a dog that urinated on him. He wants to sue his next-door neighbor for laughing. He'd like to sue his daughter.
You keep it in that suing my daughter thing.
Well, you do. You want to sue your daughter for asking you for the dog in the first place, but the most bizarre thing is you are considering suing the dog for intentional destruction.
I said I'd like to put it in the court record, and you are making me sound like I'm insane.
A guy says to me he wants to sue a dog. It sounds nuts.
Well, you want to put it in a court record that you don't like the dog.
Yeah, but you also said that the freaking dog was peeing on you because it was encouraged to do so by the laughter of the next-door neighbor.
That is absolutely correct, sir.
Okay, to me, that's a little kooky.
Well, Kooky, whatever you want, you got your life, I got mine. You want me on, I'll come on the show to explain my civil rights as a human being under the law of America.
All right, let me go over here to Beth. Hi, Beth, you're on the Phil Henry Show.
Yes, hi.
Yes, ma'am.
Let me just get started from that I'm a mom of two, and I also have two dogs. So
you got animals, ma'am?
Yes, I do love animals, and I do love children, and I do think that this gentleman should not be a father.
Hold on just a second. I'm the father of two children, my son, Stephen Jr., my daughter is April. They go to Kellner Elementary School and Middle School, and I love those children more than I love life itself.
Well, I tell you what,
the dog peed on me. They'd pee on them.
Will you let me finish a sentence?
Yeah, let the lady finish.
Thank you.
Hey, Beth, I need to ask you that.
Just let me finish.
You got to turn your radio down. Turn it down. That's what's the only thing I want to say. Okay?
All right.
Did you turn it down?
She don't even know enough to turn a radio down because I come from America.
I don't have a radio on. I don't know what you're talking about.
Do you have a radio?
I don't have a radio on when I'm talking to you.
She don't have a radio, and she's listening to the radio show. You called me nuts?
She says she didn't have it on. Go ahead, Beth.
Thank you. I do think that if your 10-year-old daughter cannot come to you as a father for a comfort,
she's not my
because
father. She's my daughter.
Whatever happened, I think that you should not have a daughter. Some organization, some child protective service, or whoever, supposed to take this poor kid out of your custody.
What am I doing?
And why don't you go ahead and take care of yourself and all your expensive shirts and everything else, whatever you can buy for the money, because one thing you cannot buy is the love of your child.
Well, ma'am, so what you're saying is I should take care of my lawsuit against the dog before I get my kids back?
I think that you should have your head exam. That's what I think.
You have my I'm sorry, I didn't get that. Have my what exam?
Your head, your brain, because I think that you are missing some parts of it.
Do you think that I don't
think you're suing your own 10-year-old daughter? Where is she gonna get the money from to pay that?
There you go.
Are you saying I should have a pet exam?
Your head examined.
Well, the dog urine affected my head. Is that what you're saying?
No,
I think that you are just screwed up all the way through.
Now,
nobody affected that.
Ma'am, I'm saying my child needs to learn respect for a dollar. She thinks it's okay to have her puppy ruin an expensive shirt.
No, she probably doesn't think it's okay. Probably you made her feel horrible about it, didn't you?
I talked to her about it.
Okay, she probably very well understands that. The dog ruined Dad's shirt. He's filing a lawsuit. Do you actually want $200 from your daughter?
We can work it out with babysitting money and doing the dishes.
Who is gonna pay her the money? I think you will. So actually, you're suing yourself.
Say that to me again.
You're suing yourself, sir.
How do you figure that?
Just look at really good at this, and I think your attorney is really after your money, nothing else but your money,
you're
for which you are so concerned.
I'm suing my own self because
you're suing yourself.
How do you figure?
Because if you go after your daughter for $200 and you're going to take it out of her allowance or her babysitting...
No, she don't get no allowance. She works for every dime.
Okay, her babysitting money and her chores money, doing dishes?
Right.
Who pays her that?
Her mother does. Oh, is you saying that I'm...
So you're getting money from yourself?
Well, that doesn't make any difference to me. At least I'm teaching the child. She won't get it. This is the whole point.
What you teaching your child is that she has absolutely no trust in you.
You know that I can have her piggy bank legally attached by the courts.
You can have her piggy bank without court. She's your daughter.
No, I can have the court attach that piggy bank.
You gave that thing to her.
What thing?
The piggy bank.
I can have the courts legally attach it and garnish it.
Why don't you just take the freaking bank and take the money out?
My daughter should sell her dolls on eBay to pay me for the $200.
All right.
I know you mean well, but I don't think you get how this whole thing came down. Dog takes a dump on me. Things happen.
You know what? Right. I had two dogs and I had two children. I've been peed on, pooped on, and thrown up on, yet I would not take my daughter, my son, or my dogs to court. I have a little bit more of my head than that.
Where are you from, ma'am, originally?
I'm coming here from Europe, from Poland.
Okay, now over in Poland town, that's probably probably a lot of poverty over there. I'm sure used to having pee and poop on them all the
time. That only tells you how little you know.
Poland is actually a country that is industrially done very well.
Oh, it used to be commie, and they probably are used to having things peeing on them.
Okay, let's not go knocking a whole freaking country, okay?
You should pretty crazy around your kids to pee on you.
All right.
Whatever it is that I am coming from or anybody that actually will want to talk to you comes from, it doesn't make any difference.
Yeah, they eat dogs in Poland.
No, they do not. That's Thailand. All right, listen, thanks, Beth.
Guy, get some education. Yeah. Get some education.
You come over from Poland?
Poland.
Doesn't matter.
All right,
it
thank
doesn't
you.
Matter.
Thank you very much, Beth. 1-800-449-8686. Steve on the Phil Hendry Show. Hello.
Hello, Phil.
Yes, sir.
You got me?
I got you.
Okay, listen. Number one, this guy ain't playing with a full deck. What he needs to do is...
You gotta get some people on here to say something different. I've been called crazy by every single caller.
Well, here's what you gotta do.
You got anything original to say, buddy?
Yeah.
You gotta sue
your wife. For having that girl.
Oh, you.
Then you
got
to sue yourself for marrying your wife.
That shows you're just as crazy as me.
Then you can get half of what you own because she's got half of it.
Okay? That shows you're just as nuts as me because you're recommending it. Okay, I'll do that, Steve.
Go ahead and do it.
And
when you want to establish pecking order...
I'm glad that you agree with me.
You got to do it in the dog's language. What you should do is pee on the dog.
All right, okay, see you later. How'd that guy ever get on the air? Here is Eric on the Phil Hendry Show.
Hey, buddy, you made a choice. You picked up that dog.
The dog didn't make no choice. Hey, the dog didn't make no choice. You tell me the dog didn't make
you
no choice?
You made the choice. You made the choice.
I picked the dog up. The dog made the choice to let a stream of urine hit a Nat-Nass $200 bowling shirt.
Well, but buddy, you made the choice of picking the dog up, and you knew that would be a possibility that he would pee on
you. No, I did not know that. I know I'd pick a dog up and pee on
him. Oh, come on. You know dogs pee all the time.
Dogs pee. They pee out in a box. They don't pee
That's
well,
cats.
Well, you know, sometimes they pee on people and accidents happen.
Well, you know something?
If you're going to pick up a little baby and a baby pees on you, are you going to pee? Are you going to sue their
parents? Somebody going to tell me about that? You think somebody would have the common decency to let me know you picked that dog up? It's going to...
Use some common sense. You have to have some education. That's got to be some common sense.
Hey, you use some common sense, and you haven't answered my question. What about the dog made the conscious decision to take a leak all over my shirt?
Oh, you think that the dog is mentally capable that he picked you out and said, I don't like this dude, I'm going to pee all over him?
You think he's
intelligent enough to make that decision?
The dog knows that I don't like animals.
No, it doesn't, see?
The dog doesn't know.
How does the dog know that? And how is the dog...
Well, what about Hutchins encouraging it?
Oh, look at me. Forget about all your stupid questions about Hutchins encouraging it.
Do you really think that a dog is that intelligent? Are you putting yourself on an intellectual equivalent as a dog?
All I know is that I will own that dog's house. He's going to regret the day he peed on me.
Oh,
Jesus.
Man,
you know what, man? You already own the dog's house, okay?
Well, technically, yeah, but...
I know. 30 days to evict him. Guy can't throw his own dog out of his own dog house because the state of California says you got to give a tenant 30 days before eviction. And what's he going to do? Get down on his hands and knees and tack up an eviction notice there on the dog house? So the dog will come by? You know, how do you know, Steve? Maybe the dog will pee on the eviction notice and go in and crash. Unfreaking believable. But that's the Phil Hendry Show. 1-800-449-8... What?
I'll change the locks on the dog.
Yeah, change the locks on the doghouse. That's what you should do. It comes in late at night, can't find its key. 1-800-449-8686, Phil Hendry Show.
The Phil Hendry Show is back.
Just want to comment on China getting the Olympics because I've actually been to China. I was in China some of you guys know this. I was there about 20 years ago, 19 years ago, next summer it'll be 20 years ago. And I was there right when they opened the borders to foreigners. China was fairly closed, you know, in the early 70s, Nixon went over there, but they didn't really open it up to tourists until the early 80s. And so I was one of the first, I'm not saying I was one of the first in that I was like one of the first 100, but I was one of the first thousands or millions that was let into the country. And they were very nice. They also did not, They were not familiar with the European face. The average Chinese had not seen Europeans. And as far as they're concerned, that's what we are. We're Americans, Europeans. We have that European face. I wasn't familiar, and we were not traveling with any African-Americans. We were traveling with a couple of what they call ABCs, American-born Chinese. That's what they call them over there. So that was that sort of freaked them a little bit. They're like, "Liz, you look like me, but what's up with that?" Well, I'm an American.
Yeah, but you look Chinese.
Well, I am Chinese. I mean Chinese. Chinese? What is this, Kung Fu?
So, I don't get it.
You know, he's Chinese. Born an American. Looks. And the Japanese were over there, too. They were the wealthiest of all tourists. The Chinese would tell me, "You Americans, you got dough, but not like these Japanese." This was in the early 80s when things were really going great in Japan. So I went over there. I went to Beijing, and I got to tell you something. Because I've been hearing people say, "Oh, why are we awarding the Olympics to a city in a country where the human rights record, blah, 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 blah." Is there a country anywhere that they were considering, at least, where the human rights record is squeaky clean? And I recognize that America is a much better place to live than China. Believe, I was there, I saw China. China wasn't too bad. I mean, if you're Chinese, it probably was pretty cool. They had washing machines. They had little tiny washing machines. And they had shoes. They were very good. They were like Buster Browns and those petroleum-based Navy issue. But they were shoes. And but you got to keep something in mind. When you talk about human rights, think about this, because this is really important. In 84, the Russians boycotted. They didn't come over here. Now, the reason why they were boycotting is because we boycotted them in 80. But the reason they gave was still a very good reason. In 1984, the city of Los Angeles was, for all intents and purposes, an out-of-control crime wasteland. There were 1,100 homicides in this city in 1980. By 84, gangbanging was completely out of control. Completely out of control. And the fear was that, and I heard people talking about this, before the 84 Olympics started, they were afraid the gridlock would be so bad on the freeways that gangs would roam up from South Central, they'd roam up the off-ramps out of the streets of South Central and start jacking people right on the freeway. And that the smog was going to be horrific and the gridlock would be life-threatening. And the Russians said, "We're not sending our athletes over to that toilet." And they were right. And the Americans said, "Well, why?" He says, "Because you can't guarantee the safety of our athletes." Now, they were doing it as a direct response to the boycott of 80. And I tell you, the reason they gave was pretty good. "So why do we want to send our athletes over to that toilet bowl of a city that you got, L.A., with its gangs and its freaking freeway shooting? It must have looked like a nut house to a place like Moscow where, you know, if somebody gets shot, it's very quiet and they don't say much about it," which is the way we like it, well, would like it over here in America. It's not so much the crime that bugs us, it's the fact it's in the paper. If you just keep a little bit quiet, it'd be really cool. So Beijing gets the Olympics and people start screaming about human rights. It may be a good argument, it may not, but I would ask you to consider the alternatives. First of all, Paris. You really want to go over there and hang with them for 2 weeks? Be my guest. You go right ahead. I know a lot of you frogophiles out there, you francophiles, you dig it. Go right ahead. Paris, 2 weeks? I was there for 10 days, and I almost leapt from the fifth floor of the hotel. I almost just jumped. Said to my wife, "When are we? Not for another couple of days. Well, let me just go ahead and end it now." It's a tough town to negotiate. Maybe during the Olympics they'd be friendlier. I don't know. Maybe there's something having to do with money. I don't know. Then there was Istanbul. Yeah, sure. You bend over. You go ahead. Just bend over in that town and things happen. Did you see Midnight Express? Istanbul? Yeah, let's have the Olympics in Istanbul. I don't even think they got a stadium over there. They have to start building now. You know, in other words, they would be awarding the Olympics to a city. They ain't got nothing, man. I think they just figured out the outhouse over there. No offense, but, and I say that with all due respect because my brother-in-law, he digs Turkey. "You must go to Turkey, Phil. It's the best place." I said, "I'm not going to go to Turkey. Why not?" Because all I need to tell you about is that freaking Brad Davis in Midnight Express. He got bent over, and that's all she wrote. But you talk about a broom handle.
Well, other than that.
Yeah, other than that. Then there was Toronto. Hey, you can't have it. That's a real swinging burg, Toronto, yeah. You're going to have it in the town where it could snow in August? Toronto. My folks are from Toronto. You don't want to put it there. And then there was Osaka, which is Japanese. And how many Olympics have they had in Japan? They've had like 18 Olympics in Japan. And every time you turn around, there's an Olympics in Japan. It's only a logical place to have would be Beijing, all right? You want to talk about human rights and all of this? That's the biggest load being shoveled. And right now, I just saw where Bush, he wants to be hard on Cuba because he wants to let people know he's hard on, like, that's an original thought. This whole trip about being hard on the communists, there's no such thing. Because we're doing business with them right now. We've been doing business with the Chinese now for 20-plus years. They make a lot of sneakers over there that we really dig. Most of the American flags you're waving around out on the street are made in China, and I don't mean Taiwan. So why not have it over there, okay? They're not beating up the tourists. What do you care? Going to go over there and make a statement? Look, you're going to go to China, man. You're going to see the tea garden, the little meditation garden. Some Buddhist monk will make a nice little, make a nice spread, a little gefilte fish for you or something, whatever they make. And you'll feel great, and you won't care who's in prison over there, as long as it ain't you, okay? It's just a bunch of Chinese. Let's, in other words, treat it the way we've always treated these repressive regimes where we've celebrated the Olympics. Let's go over and have some fun. Forget about it. How about the 36 Olympics? It was in Berlin. You know what that was all about back then? They didn't like Jews, and they didn't really have much of love in their heart for black people. Well, we sent the Americans over there. Jesse Owens scored 4 gold medals. We wouldn't have all those great Jesse Owens stories if we didn't go to Berlin in 36. We wouldn't have all those cool stories about, and the worst story that came out of the 36 Olympics didn't have anything to do with Nazis. It had to do with the U.S. Olympic Committee that wouldn't let 2 Jewish runners run because they didn't want to offend Der Führer. So forget about Germany. It was the United States Olympic Committee that kept 2 Jews from running in the 4x100 because they didn't want to piss off Goebbels. So that was Marty Glickman and the other guy, the other Jewish guy, Jesse Owens. All right, 1-800-449-86. That's the truth. Look it up. Well, don't look it up because I may be wrong, but look it up. 1-800-449-8686. Phil Hendry Show. I got some nice slides from China I'll be showing next hour if you want to.
We're
going to talk a little bit today about, believe it or not, we're going to get way off of everything the political that we've been talking about. We're going to talk about Spider-Man. The movie's been out for a while, but you probably didn't know, I didn't know, that there are some controversial aspects to the movie. It seems like every movie that comes out that is popular, there are at least 1 or 2 controversial aspects, or at least that some people find controversial about the movie. The Spider-Man movie, if you didn't see it, has a theme, believe it or not, of celibacy in it. Chris Norton is a telemarketer from Manhattan Beach. He's also an aspiring screenwriter and has taken part in a number of roundtables on screenwriting and bringing screenwriting into the 21st century. And Chris joins us from Manhattan Beach, California. Chris, how are you?
Yes, sir, I'm fine.
Chris, you think that there's an anti-sex message in Spider-Man?
Yes, sir. I think anybody who has seen the movie knows what I'm talking about. In the movie, Spider-Man chooses at the very end of the movie to walk away from the girl that he has loved since he was 6 years old. He chooses his life of duty to fight crime above his desire to have sex with his love. And her name in the movie, by the way, is MJ. She's played by Kirsten Dunst, who's very hot. There's a scene where it's raining, and she's wearing a kind of a thin top. So it's all wet, and you can see everything. And it's hot. And
to you, this is a message of celibacy.
Oh, absolutely. It's a message of celibacy. He's saying to a girl that he thought was hot since he was 6, no, I'm not going to have sex with you. I'm going to walk away because it's better to fight crime.
But the kids who go to this movie are just that. They're kids.
I believe that the message of celibacy is wrong, though.
No, but the kids who go to this movie are just that. They're kids. So maybe the message of celibacy is a positive message for them to stay celibate.
That's true, but look at what celibacy has done. And here's, I think, we got to get down to what my father used to call brass tacks. The message of celibacy, look what it has done to the priests who have been convicted of fondling children. So you now have a generation of kids who will think it's cool to be Spider-Man, and because Spider-Man is celibate, they might get the message that somehow in their minds that it's all right to fawn little kids.
You really think that they'll make that leap?
I'm very disturbed about a priest and what we have seen in the revelations. And Spider-Man comes out at a very wrong time. It comes out at a time where we've had a priest, and the message of celibacy is basically it's okay to fondle little kids, and Spider-Man gives a message of celibacy. I see a continuum there, Mr. Henry, and I see it's all very, very much connected. Number two, there is a larger issue, I think, and that is the $10 billion a year adult film industry that relies on people, on people's sexual curiosity. Promoting a life of celibacy beyond priests jeopardizes an enormous industry. That's a lot of jobs, a lot of mouths to feed.
Let me go back to your first point that celibacy leads to child molestation. In the movie Spider-Man, Spider-Man says, with great power comes great responsibility. Isn't that a positive message?
Well, it sounds to me more like with great power comes a greater chance of putting your hand down a little kid's pants. So no, this is anti-sex, and it is wrong.
All right, then to your second point about the adult film business suffering a drop-off because of all of the celibacy. Do you really think that's likely?
I don't know. I mean, all I know is a lot of my friends are in the adult film business. I've been on a lot of the sets. I've talked with the actors. I've even had hopes myself of getting into the film business one day, and I've got two meetings scheduled for next week, a matter of fact, and I know a lot of my friends who are in the adult film business could be very hurt badly by kids not having sex.
So now you have a solution, and I know that you have sent some pictures into to the producers.
Well, I know that Spider-Man 2 has already been shot, but my solution is to sexualize Spider-Man to some degree. I don't think to a great degree, but I think to some degree. If you look at Tobey Maguire in the movie who plays Spider-Man, it looks like they've taped him down. And I have sent Sam Raimi pictures of myself in a Spider-Man outfit. I'm not trying to be Spider-Man, but I've sent examples of what Spider-Man, a sexualized Spider-Man, looks like. And I know you have the pictures there.
Well, I'm looking at pictures of you. Is this you in the Spider-Man outfit?
Yes, sir. I mean, Tobey Maguire almost looks like a girl in a costume. That's how not much of him that you see.
Okay, I want to give our number out, and then I want to comment on these pictures, okay?
Yes, sir.
All right, our number is 1-800-449-8686. 1-800-449-8686. Chris Norton, an aspiring screenwriter, talking about the anti-sex message in Spider-Man, where he is choosing a life of celibacy. And Mr. Norton believes that that message will lead children to believe that it's all right to fondle kids. Plus, it'll impact the adult film business, a $10 billion a year business, and there are a lot of mouths to feed there. Now, I'm looking at pictures of you in a Spider-Man costume. You are wearing a suit. There's a front view of you.
Yes, sir. It's a front view of me, and it's obvious that when you look at me in the outfit, I mean, you can see it right there, I have very obvious manhood. My manhood is obvious, especially in the profile shots. And there's one where my manhood is obvious in the full frontal view. I'm not saying I'm Spider-Man, okay? But I am saying I could help take away the confusion that Tobey Maguire's Spider-Man left kids with. A guy who doesn't have sex and isn't interested in sex and therefore promotes celibacy, which can be construed, you know.
Which can be construed to mean fondling kids.
That's right, because of the message that the priests have left. I'm very, very concerned about what the priest done. And if in Spider-Man they give the same message...
Well, Spider-Man is not, let's be clear, is not promoting child molestation.
No, not overtly, but they are promoting no sex. Okay, at the very end, he says, I'm not going to have sex. Now, this girl that we're talking about, I'm very fearful we'll have a new generation of child molestations because of this movie.
Yeah, but I want to say again, they're not promoting that in the movie.
No, but at the end of the movie, Kirsten Dunst, in one scene, it's raining, and you can see everything because her clothes are clinging to her. You see everything. And it's very hot. It's very romantic. It's the part...
Yeah, I know. It's the part where he comes down and he kisses her, and it's a very romantic kiss.
It's more than a romantic kiss. It's hot. I mean, and you can see everything because the rain makes her clothes wet. And he, at the end of the movie, says, no thank you, I'm sure. And that's what troubles me. It's anti-sex.
All right. 1-800-449-8686 is the number in the Phil Henry Show. Mr. Norton, do you believe children should have sex?
I think that's an unfair question to ask me, given the fact that I haven't said that. What I am saying is that kids who go see Spider-Man are getting a message early that celibacy is preferable. And right now, I'm really concerned with the priests and how they fondle kids.
And what about your comment when in the movie it says, with great power comes great responsibility. You say with great power comes a bigger chance of you putting your hand down a kid's pants.
Well, that's what it says to me. If I was a kid and I went to Spider-Man and I seen them say no cess, I would say, oh, you mean like the priests? And they're the ones that are crotch fondling or whatever you want to call it.
All right, 1-800-449-8686. Christopher Norton, aspiring screenwriter, and you have sent these photos to the director, Sam Raimi?
Yes, sir. That's the ones of me where you can see my manhood, and that is just a slight sexualization of the character.
Let me go over to Carrie on the Phil Hendry Show. Carrie, go ahead.
Hi. I just took my kids this weekend to see Spider-Man. I have a 19-year-old son, and I have a 14-year-old daughter. And not one time did any of us look at his crotch or think that he was more or less of a man. We were watching the story of a cartoon character brought to life. And I don't understand what his drive is just to look at this guy's crotch.
I'm saying there's no sexual message in the film. The message is celibacy.
The reason he walked away from his girlfriend was not because he didn't want to have sex with her. It's because he was protecting her from people who wanted to hurt her, like the Green Goblin would have hurt her.
No.
So he gave up
true.
He thinks is going to be his love,
but
so that he can protect those people he loves.
But he was hot for her.
Yeah, but doesn't he say in the movie...
It doesn't matter if he's hot for her. That wasn't the point. The point was he did it for love. That was a romantic thing, not a sexual thing. Oh, my gosh.
Right,
and I don't know what to do. I don't think celibacy leads to homophobia or...
Yeah. Okay, that's a legitimate statement. But the message that we're getting in society right now is that celibacy does lead to child fondlement and the incidents of fondlement that we've seen. A child goes to see Spider-Man and sees that there is an anti-sex message.
But that's not what this lady's saying. She's saying it's not an anti-sex message. It's more of a protection message that he says in the movie, everyone that I've ever loved winds up getting hurt. Okay?
That's what an adult takes away from it. But what a child takes away from it, from all the anti-sex messages in school, is no sex is good.
Okay, number one, what would it have done to have these two have sex? It would have added to the story at that point. These two really had just developed a relationship. I thought it was more mature that they are going to go on and have Spider-Man 2, 3, and 4 develop something. I don't think, in the comic books they get married.
Yeah. Well, that's in the comic book, but that...
I don't know why we're comparing Spider-Man to priests. These priests who are doing this stuff are sick people, and I don't think it's necessarily because they're celibate.
Okay, but the comic book is out the window. What we got to talk about is the millions and billions of kids that the movie's going to reach. It's a whole new franchise, the movie. It's a whole new story, the movie. I mean, in the comic book, Peter Parker is a clone, okay? But in the movie, it's a whole new franchise. And what we're getting here is, I know you're hot. Yeah, I could see everything when, even though he was upside down, he could see everything in the rain scene. You know what? I'm not going to have sex with you. That's what the message is.
I was watching a whole different movie than you were, buddy.
You didn't see the rain scene. You didn't see the rain scene.
Thank goodness I wasn't watching the same movie you were.
You didn't see the rain scene where she was wet? You didn't see the rain scene where she was wet?
I saw the rain scene. She was about to be raped by four guys.
Yeah, but she's all wet and you can see everything. She's all wet.
Oh, my
gosh. No one else in the world is celibate but priests.
What's wrong with you?
What's wrong with you?
Do you think of anything besides sex?
Excuse me.
Good God.
The film has everything that you can see, nipple and everything.
I saw the scene in the alley where she's wet, and yeah, her breasts are very evident, okay?
Well, that's a very polite way of saying that you could see nipple. And the fact that he did not respond to that.
I guess it's because I'm a woman. I just didn't notice. I'm sorry.
There's a saying that a lot of kids use called her high beams were shining. Okay? And, that's what you know, that,
calm
that,
down.
That's, hey, you know what? Okay, if you're the mother of a son, you know.
I am.
All right. 1-800-449-8686.
There was no doubt that there was nippage. And I will say it again. I'm very, very, even if the parents out there listening right now, Mr. Henry, are not concerned about priests, okay, you know, fondling and with their hands down in some child's crotch, even if parents listening right now are not concerned, I'm very concerned. And the message that the Spider-Man, that you could see her nipples and he doesn't do anything, sends the message that celibacy is cool and that it's okay to have your hand down any pair of slacks, no matter what the size. And that's why I sent the pictures off to Mr. Ramey.
All right. 1-800-449-8686. It's difficult for me to listen to a guy say he's concerned about children being fondled, and on the other edge of it, he says the Spider-Man movie, therefore, must have more sexualization because the message of celibacy that the Spider-Man movie sends ultimately leads kids to believe that celibacy is cool, and therefore they're going to want to act like priests who fondle kids. And that's his fear. 1-800-449-8686. 1-800-449-8686. And what Mr. Norton is also saying is he'd like to see the Spider-Man movie sexualized, and that is show some evident manhood in the Spider-Man character. That's why he sent pictures of himself. 1-800-449-8686 is the number. This is The Phil Henry Show.
And now more on The Phil Henry Show.
Let's go to Melina. Melina, hi. You're on The Phil Henry Show with Chris Norton, aspiring screenwriter on the Spider-Man movie. Go ahead, Melina.
Yes. The guy that you were interviewing and gave him all that time, I think he is a disturbed man. And all the reason I'm saying that...
you're talking to me right now.
I am talking to you?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, you were disturbed.
Well...
You're very disturbed.
I'm sitting here talking about how...
concerned that she was hot.
I'm talking about protecting children.
You want to be in the business, so you want everything to be filthy and dirty.
No, ma'am. I
yes,
want to protect children from getting molested.
Children are getting molested by Spider-Man or by just
no,
going
they're getting molested.
Spider-Man?
Yes.
Those are two different things.
Look, the priests are celibate.
The priests are doing what they're doing.
Aren't the priests celibate? Yes.
They're not doing
it
because they're celibate.
What?
Because they can go in a relationship with another woman or with another adult.
Did you see Spider-Man?
Yes, I did see Spider-Man.
Okay, at the very end, even though she's hot as hell, you got to admit.
There you go again. Hot as hell.
She was. I mean, are you telling me you couldn't see everything?
She was very attractive. You know what?
You couldn't see everything.
The reason he walked away, it was because he wanted to protect her. Not because he's celibate and he wants to give impression of celibacy to children. It's okay to
okay,
see.
did he have sex at all in the movie? No. Did he have sex with her even though she's
why
hot?
Why has to be
no.
sex in everything we see?
Because he was hot.
No.
You saw nipples.
We take our children
didn't you see
to movies and
you...
we don't want to show them that everything has to be about sex.
But Melina,
they show to respect.
Melina, didn't you see, you saw a nipple, right? Yes or no?
Gee, I saw nipples.
Okay, thank you very much.
I
God,
see nipples
geez.
Most of the time.
No, I'm talking about in the movie. Okay?
What is it, nipples?
Nipples, there was a
you
nipple
have a
shot.
Thing with nipples.
There was a nipple shot in the movie.
Meaning what?
Meaning there was sex in the movie. So why didn't he have sex? Because the message was, sex is bad.
The
now,
message was
I
that sex
lot,
was bad.
I have a lot
that
of friends.
They didn't want to go too far into it because the movie is made for children.
I have
it's
a lot
a
of friends.
It's a family movie.
Do you?
It's not a porno movie like you're going to do,
no.
okay?
How am I
you're
gonna
interested
make it?
In pornography? Then you, and where was interested in pornography, then you expect to see nipples? And
yes,
you
ma'am.
Expect to see your manhood?
Ma'am,
that's a family movie.
Ma'am, all I'm saying
you
is...
You take children. You don't need to see sex every movie you go to. And I tell you piss me off.
Well,
all you have to say, she's hot.
She
you
want
to have sex with her?
She's very hot.
Do you want to have sex with her?
I wouldn't kick her out of bed for eating crackers.
Yeah, but she won't kick you.
Well, let me say something, okay? because all you've done is insult me, and all I want to do is keep from fondlement. There has been a high incidence of priest fondlement, and I want to keep it down.
You want to keep it down?
Yeah.
You don't listen to yourself.
What did I say? I'm saying...
You want to keep it down by showing kids in Spider-Man if there was sex.
What?
You're saying that if there was, if Spider-Man would have sex with the girl, this fondles with children would never happen again.
Yes.
No.
Yes. Well,
no.
Okay, here's what I think.
No.
Okay, I
no.
got a lot of friends in the adult film business, okay? And
yeah, I
if
heard.
You have people, because I'm also going to be interviewed in 2 weeks about being in an adult film myself.
And I'm sure I will not go and see that movie.
What? Hey, all I'm saying is...
What are you guys saying?
I'm saying...
You're saying
that
nothing.
If people are celibate, the $10 billion a year adult film industry...
That's what that you're relies, concerned with.
No, I'm not. I'm,
yes,
I'm concerned.
You are. You're concerned that you're going to lose. People like you are going to lose.
I don't care.
That's what your concern is.
I don't
not
care.
The children.
I don't care, but I said...
not the priest what you're doing.
You should
you're
see a picture of me.
That you lose some business.
You should see a picture of me, okay? You can see my manhood.
I don't want to see a picture of you.
Oh, you can see my manhood. And
your manhood?
I have
it's like any other manhood.
I have a large manhood, though.
Yeah, well, to stick it up your ass.
Yeah, okay,
if you
well...
can reach it.
Yeah, well, you know what? If you saw me, you'd think I was very hot and you'd want to have sex.
That's what you think.
Well...
Okay, thank you.
All right, thank
all right,
you.
Thank
you're
you
disgusting.
Very much.
No, you're a pervert.
No, ma'am, I have a very big manhood like an armadillo.
Hold on. 1-800-449-8686. 1-800-449-8686. The Spider-Man movie sends a message of celibacy, according to this man, and it's a bad message to send. 1-800-449-8686, Phil Hendry Show.
Henry Show is back. 1-800-449-8686.
Len, go ahead. You're on the Phil Henry Show with Chris Norton, screenwriter.
Thanks, Phil.
Yes, sir.
Mr. Norton, you know, it occurs to me that, you know, celibacy does not lead to pedophilia. If anything, the priesthood maybe have become like a rest area that has become a safe haven for pedophiliacs, but, you know, I think you're mixing up some issues.
Well, I mean,
there.
I'm very concerned about these people in celibate. Because all they ever do is fondle kids.
Well, you're talking to someone who's been celibate for about 4 years, and I have no desire to fondle any children at all.
You're not a priest.
Well, again,
okay.
I think, you know, you get a rest stop that becomes known in that community as being a safe haven, and this has been long-term with the priesthood over, you know, 30, 40 years, and it's become a safe haven.
Well, I don't think
Sure, you've got a real problem there, but that doesn't mean that all priests have a tendency to want to fondle our children.
Well, I think that you're an adult, but you're talking about children who go to see the Spider-Man movie, and they see... Why are you celibate?
Just personal choice. Didn't want to get back into a bad relationship or restrain what I've been in.
How can you not have sex?
It's not that hard. You know, you kind of get used to it, and you find there's some real benefits to getting to know yourself and not being distracted from yourself and being involved in bad relationships.
You know,
it's a personal choice.
I'm very sensual, and I got to have it. I mean, I don't know about you.
Well, maybe if you went without it for a while, you'd start to get to know yourself better, and maybe you have tendencies yourself somewhere in there. I don't know.
Oh, it sounds like you don't. Because I have sex and you don't. Now you want to make me into a fondler.
Well, I'm hearing a few things, other things you're saying too,
like
you know, Spider-Man promoting celibacy. You know, which I don't think is a bad thing.
Well, no,
and
you don't because you don't have no need.
I took my 10-year-old daughter to this movie, and I did not see.
You don't have no need to have sex. But I have.
Pardon me?
You don't have no need to have sex. I'm very sensual, and I'm not saying this. I'm not trying to, you know, say I'm great or anything. But I've had sex with probably 3,000 women.
Well, see, now you probably do some counseling in that area, sir.
Why? It's great. It feels good and everything.
Well, you not only put yourself at risk, you put other people at risk.
I'd like to ask you something. You don't have sex. I mean, how do you take care of it? Do you wax it or what?
How many communicable diseases have you had in your life, sir?
I've I had gonorrhea when I was 16, but I learned.
Right. Well,
I learned.
And you're probably lucky it wasn't AIDS, and you probably have the genital warts, all that type of thing going on, too.
Yes,
and
I do.
And you put people at risk. You put people at risk.
Do you have herpes?
That's a pretty bad.
I've never had
a communicable disease.
I have herpes, yeah. I have herpes, I have genital warts, and I have had gonorrhea, but that's it.
That's just wonderful. And
what's that supposed to mean?
And you're probably one of those people that doesn't tell your partner about those things before you happen to sack with them.
I wear a condom.
Well, those are really foolproof, aren't they?
Well, I mean, fact is, I think, and I'm not trying to put you down or nothing, but I think it's kind of weird that you don't like to have no sex.
I didn't say I didn't like to have it. I didn't say I didn't desire it. I said I have chosen not to do that at this time in my life.
I think I know what's going on with you. Are you afraid of sex?
I don't think you know what's going on at all.
Well, are you afraid of women?
Wait a minute.
This is not about Lynn.
Wonderful relationships with women.
So you're not afraid of not being able to get a wood on if you're with a girl?
I never said that was a problem for me. You're putting words in my mouth.
No, I'm trying to. Well, what I'm saying, either a lady laughed at your package one time or something, because.
You're projecting, and I think you're projecting to some extent
you
have in your life. Maybe you're overcompensating for that woman laughing at you.
No woman laughed at me.
As far as Spider-Man goes, I saw the movie, sir.
I took the picture of my manhood. They have Viagra.
Never mind about this, okay? We're talking about Spider-Man.
Yeah,
and
he's
how
a little narcissistic.
What?
You're a little narcissistic, I think.
No,
going back to Spider-Man the movie, I thought it was a good movie. I thought it stayed pretty well in line with the comic books.
How do you think you look?
As I grew up.
Okay. I just have a question. As opposed to me, which I do look good in the Spider-Man costume, how do you think you'd look in it?
Well, I suppose if I had to look like the guy in the movie, I'd probably be taped down too.
Okay, but if you weren't taped down,
I'd be fine.
Yeah,
I'd be fine. I've never had any complaints in that area. That has nothing to do with a person making a choice in his wife.
You could see my manhood.
Okay, man, about your freaking manhood.
Well, I want to, if I could, Mr. Henry, talk about the event we're going to have this Saturday, Manhattan Beach.
What?
I'm going to be in the Spider-Man costume, and I will be walking down Manhattan Beach, and I want people to come out and take a look to see if they like the new Spider-Man look. And I'll be walking down Manhattan Beach near the pier. And they
is that the same look in the comic books? Because that's what the movie was based on.
Well, it's my idea of just a slightly sexualized.
You're perverting it and wanting to make a sexual thing out of the adding more sex to the movie.
No.
I mean, what for?
No, I'm not necessarily saying that they have to have sex, although they should because he's hot for her. Did you see the movie?
Yes, wonderful. Okay. I took my 10-year-old daughter to see the movie.
Did you see the nipple shot?
That was a great shot.
Okay. That's what
I didn't have any big problem with that. You know, my daughter didn't have that big of a problem with that either.
No, and so that's what I'm saying.
Because we see this in everything all over the media.
Okay, but you say you don't want to sexualize the movie. Is that right, Mr. Norton?
Yes, sir.
Then why do you have in your proposal that you sent to Mr. Raimi that Spider-Man shoot webs out of his penis?
Because I thought that adds something to the...
That's not even in the comic book.
So what, that makes me a bad guy now?
You're not going to take a kid to a movie like that.
Well, I'm not saying show it. It could just come out of a flap in his suit.
Webs coming out.
So the guy's just perverted.
I'm perverted. I'm the guy that came on here and said, I don't believe in priests having no sex. And I'm also the guy that came on here and said, I'm very concerned about the fondlement.
Oh, boy. That just scares me to no end.
Scares you?
Sure.
All right, so
guys
Spider-Man,
like you that I have to watch out for because of my daughter.
I'm the guy who's concerned about kids getting fondled.
Yeah, but you got Spider-Man shooting a spider web out of his penis.
Yeah, and then he swings from it.
Thank you very much, Larry.
Hey,
I'll be in Manhattan Beach. Wait a minute, where's he going?
Well, I'm letting him go.
Well, I'm going to be in Manhattan Beach in a Spider-Man suit. My costume's going to have hard blue nips on it like the Batman suit. And also another thing is I'll have a flap in the back so you can kind of... And can I mention the opening scene?
Do you want kids to go down and see this?
No, I'm just saying, to sexualize Spider-Man, I'm also going to be at, writing a scene that I want Mr. Raimi to look at, and I want you to just listen to this, if you could, Mr. Henry. The movie opens, and you see a spider, a picture of a spider going backwards and forwards, and as the camera pans back, you realize it's a spider that's on his butt, and his butt's going up and down.
Okay, so he finally gets MJ, is that it?
Well, I think we should. I think people need that resolution. I think people need to have that resolution. So I'll be on Manhattan Beach with a flap in the back and a web.
Good luck, man. 1-800-449-8686. Mr. Chris Norton, aspiring screenwriter, who believes that Spider-Man sends a dangerous message of celibacy. What?
I'm sorry, I just want to mention one more thing.
What?
There's a scene in the movie where it opens. She's got web on her face. And
okay, that's all I needed to hear. Mr. Chris Norton will be at the walking down the beach in the Spider-Man costume this Saturday. You can go out and see him and see what do you think of the new slightly sexualized Spider-Man, because the celibate Spider-Man sends a dangerous message. 1-800-449-8686, The Phil Hendry Show.
Show 1-800-449-8686.
And now it's time for more Phil Hendry Comedy Gold from yesterday's show. Father James McWhorter paid us a visit. By the way, I was doing the voice there of Chris Norton in that preceding bit. That's what we do at our show sometimes. I do the voice of these different guests. People call in and think they're real. Like on yesterday's show, Father James McWhorter was a guest, and Father McWhorter was saying the solution to the child molestation priest problem was not so much to discipline the priests as to pay off the victims of the priest's molestation.
Phil Hendry Show.
Comedy gold.
You're a mockery of the Catholic
Why
Church.
Wouldn't you?
And
Why
what
wouldn't
irritates
you?
Me is when you just said
you
that that little
there?
Boy should go to confession and confess. How did he entice you? What did that boy do to you? Somebody should take a 2x4 to your head. And you know
two
what? You should serve jail time.
Why shouldn't
and you know, priests that have affected a child should serve jail time. Anybody else has to be monitored, but you
all
people
right,
get off scot free.
Hold on, Diana. What were you saying, Father?
Diana sits there and takes communion for free. We don't charge her for that.
You want to bet? I pay every Sunday I go to church, and I'm a good person, and I would never do what you did. My mother taught me better. My mother taught me the right thing, and you, people should look at you, and you drinking scotch? What example are you setting for these kids? You're saying
me,
it's okay? We can pay you off, and it's okay to molest a child?
No,
what is
I did
wrong
not
with you?
Well, what do you do with the priests who molest?
The priests are... The priests have to go to summer youth camps.
Oh, wow.
And they work with... What's wrong with that?
Oh, summer youth camps. What the hell? And work with kids?
Yes.
What, are you crazy?
Ma'am,
you know
that,
what? You're lucky somebody doesn't plant you 6 feet under and have you pushing up daisies. But you know what? They probably wouldn't have that in hell anyhow, because that's where you're going to end up going. I can't even imagine. God is good. But for you to do that and think it's okay... And then
pitch
the bus onto everybody else? What are you, crazy?
I paid compensation to the boy.
Oh, yeah, $10. Whoopee-doo.
Because, well, how much did you want me to pay him?
You shouldn't have, you know, you're sick. Do you realize how sick you are?
Have
you
been to any...
You shouldn't even be called father.
Father
McWhorter. Trust me, I wouldn't call you father.
I want to ask you something,
Father. You know what? You are such scum.
Hold on, Diana, hold on. Father, what did, after you, they caught you looking down the kids' pants, what did they make you do?
Who called them?
I worked at a summer youth camp for three consecutive summers.
Hello.
It was the greatest time of my life.
What yeah, obviously.
Well, what are you intimating?
You know what? It was open fodder. You know what? And these kids trusted you. And because you wore a collar, that made it okay. That made
I
it okay.
To
you
make
took
it all
away
right for the
all of their youth. They're innocent.
$100,000 was
promised. It doesn't mean jack.
It doesn't mean jack.
It doesn't mean jack.
I just want to be clear.
These kids are scarred for life.
I want to be clear, Diana. You, Diana, in New York, wouldn't take $100,000 to get on your knees.
Are you kidding? If I were to find anything, I would give it back to the rightful owner. I would never do something like that.
$200,000 to get down on your knees.
Nothing. Nothing. You know what? Why don't you just go and legalize prostitution? Because that's the same thing, isn't it?
No, it is not the same thing.
Oh,
what
it is.
Doing
too. They're paying for a service.
I'll give you
paid for a service.
$1 million to
what
get down on your
you
knees.
So righteous? What makes you so righteous? Because you've got the Catholic Church behind you?
That's
you make
right.
me sick. You know
I'm
what? I'm going to get out of the Catholic Church. Catholic Church because of people like you.
Prostitution's cheaper. Well, good. Get out. Don't let the screen door hit you on the ass on the way out.
Oh, yeah, exactly. There you go. Goodbye, Mr. Phil.
You're a brand new condo for a threesome with Sister Agatha and Sister Maga. Shoot.
Phil Hendry Show.
Comedy gold.
There you go. Another comedy gold nugget from the cheeks of our show. 1-800-449-8686. Speaking of that, if you're among those who downloaded the R. Kelly sex videotape, well, you had just best get rid of it, Jim. So, you think it's cute downloading stuff off of the internet, huh? You think it's kind of fun? You got it in your library. You heard about R. Kelly. You know who he is? Some cat that sings. So another black guy that sings. And anyway, I'm joking about the other black guy that sings part. He's another guy that sings. He's another black guy that got involved with an underage girl and is in trouble. No. You know what? Was it Chuck Berry? I believe it was Chuck Berry who had the same hassle. Elvis Presley and Chuck Berry had the same hassle way back when. Back in the day, Presley paid the whole thing off and cooled it out. Berry had to go to the... I think Berry went to jail. Anyway, cut to 2002, 21st century, the new millennium. Guy named R. Kelly. Apparently they got a tape of him having sex with a 14-year-old. Is it true? I don't know. But that's what they say. Mr. Kelly denies it. But what I would like to know, and he is in custody, and there's a picture of him being led into the jailhouse by police. He's in custody. How many of these priests are in jail? Again, we come back to the same theme. It's difficult for us to put a priest in jail. It's just, you can't do it. You could put the Berrigans in jail. Do you know who the Berrigans were? Philip and Daniel Berrigan, you could put them in jail because they were anti-nuclear protesters, and so there was something cool and countercultural and hip about seeing two guys with a turned around collar sitting behind bars because they didn't dig nuclear bombs. And that's in keeping sort of with the period. But a priest in jail for molesting a child goes against every Boys Town movie, every Pat O'Brien image. It goes against every one of those images that we have of priests. Priest in jail for pornography. Priest in jail for... No, the mind doesn't accept it. So if the mind doesn't accept it, then it's very difficult to actually prosecute. And so, well, we send him off to a retreat or something like that. Meanwhile, R. Kelly's in jail. Imagine, why am I laughing? I don't know. I just, for some reason, I find it funny. I really find it hysterically funny. Guy's sitting in there right now going, man, what is up with this? You got me?
Just chill out in there, okay?
I'm a chill out man. I'm in here on account of a film. I got a damn priest out there. I got his hand down every kind of pan.
You know, I really dig your records.
Oh, that's real nice. Thank you. Guy could go away for 15 years if he's convicted. Meanwhile, now they did get that Shanley guy out of San Diego because that was just too overt. That was, you can't ignore. What was he doing? He was part of that North American boy, man, boy, white on black, black on white, soft porn bondage organization. How much sicker? How much more twisted? North American Man Boy Love Association. How further down can you sink? Pelton was pointing to Chris Taylor or Craig Taylor, and I don't know what that meant, but the North American Man Boy Love Organization. The North American Man Boy Parakeet Love. There's no words to fail me. And this is a priest that was the head of the Man Boy Spaniel Love Organization. Man Boy Bovine Spaniel Parakeet Man Spaniel Love Association. Yes, we're part of the North American Man Ovine. And now the Phil Hendry Show presents another uplifting email. Uplifting email. This is a portion of the program where we bring you not email that is critical, but email that constructs. Email that creates. An email that helps us get on a better path. Bud, you have today's uplifting email?
I do, Phil. This today uplifting email comes from Scotty's Auto Air. And here it is. Beautiful email.
Go ahead.
Hi. Please tell Mr. Henry to jump up a camel's ass. Thanks, Scotty's Auto Air. What are you looking at?
Well, I'm looking at you. And once again, the question is, how do you figure, please tell Mr. Henry to jump up a camel's ass? How do you figure that's uplifting email?
Well, it was funny, and that's the only one we got.
I don't think it's funny.
I do.
Well, you're not telling you to jump up a camel's ass, are they?
I guess not.
Yeah. It's the only one you got, huh?
I told Mr. Hall, he said to read it because it's funny.
Well, I'll tell you what, I'm going to send an email tomorrow that says, hi, please tell Mr. Hall to jump up a camel's ass. You want me to read that on the air?
Oh, no, you get fired then.
Yeah, uh-huh.
This has been Uplifting Email on the Phil Henry Show.